The Bay Area Interactive Group presents The Big Sessions with me, John Ray. Your quick one-on-one with the big shots in the interactive and digital space.
Welcome to The Big Session. My guest today is Larry Kramer, the president of CBS Digital Media. Larry began his career in 1974 as a reporter. He spent more than 20 years in journalism as a reporter and editor on such notable newspapers as The Washington Post, The Trenton Times, and The San Francisco Examiner. In 1991, Larry started a new career as the founder, president, and executive editor of DataSport, Inc. When DataSport was acquired by Data Broadcasting Corp. in 1994, Larry headed up their sports and news divisions. It was not too long when his proposal to create a joint venture between Data Broadcasting Corp. and CBS led to the creation of MarketWatch.com. Larry was the founder, chairman, and chief executive officer of MarketWatch.com from 1997 until most recently when he joined CBS Digital Media in May 2005. He is a founding board member of the Online Publishers Association and in 2004-2005 is serving a two-year term as chairman of the OPA. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Larry in his San Francisco offices where we chatted about everything from his reporting days to the internet to podcasting to other emerging technologies. I have to say, I'm very fortunate to be in the circles of some of the most interesting and dynamic folks in advertising, but I would be hard-pressed to find a more inspiring, intelligent, personable, and simply down-to-earth guy as Larry. This podcast is a little bit longer than usual because there is nothing usual about the great Larry Kramer. Welcome to The Big Session. I've got Larry Kramer with me. It is great to have you here.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
All right, let's just open up. The first question is, we're going to talk a little about podcasting today. And my first question is, when is the first time, do you remember you heard the term podcast?
You know, it wasn't that long ago. I think it was maybe a year at the most. And I thought, first thing I heard, I thought it sounded like, you know, a cheesy B-movie that had something to do with outer space. But then fairly quickly, as my kids reminded me, because they both have iPods, understood that it had something to do with an iPod. And conceptually, the idea of doing something that was transportable and downloadable and listened to elsewhere was obvious to me as something we'd want to do anyway, because I've been doing it. I actually have, morphed pretty quickly into listening to books on tape on iPods and as well as music. So it was one of those new technologies that came on us rather quickly, but stuck. And I was pretty impressed with how fast the industry has grown around not just music, but other content. And I think it's a testimony to how quickly the digital media world is moving in all directions.
Well, we're going to get back to podcasting and kind of what CBS Digital is doing there. But first, let me start off with a quote. This comes from the San Francisco Chronicle, April 17th, 05, not too long ago. You said, quote, "We view television as television. We don't believe that the web is appointment TV." Does that mean that were you saying there that the TV is basically not the web and the web is not TV, or do you not see the web as an appointment viewing media?
Yeah, that was a hardware discussion, in effect. I don't think people, given the choice, will sit down in front of a computer screen the way they would sit down in front of a 50-inch plasma. And however, I don't want to confuse that with the fact that the ability to deliver television and to create television and allow a person to create their own television on a computer and send it to a TV is very real, and we do think that's going to happen. But we believe that a person who wants to look at video on the web has a different set of reasons than somebody who probably wants to look at video on a big screen TV right now. So if I want to sit down in the living room and relax and watch television or watch the news or do whatever I want to do on TV, I'll do that. If I have a certain amount of urgency to what I'm doing, or it's during the day when I'm at work and I want to see something that's going on in the news, I want video to be as much of that presentation as I have time to look at, and I'll do that. But when you sit down in front of a TV, you're making a statement essentially about your time. You're saying, I'm willing to sit down, I'm going to spend a half hour or hour, whatever it is, watch a show, a few hours, I need to veg out, whatever. But on the computer, it's more generally a content-driven, time-constrained affair where you're really looking for something quickly or you're searching, or you're doing something where it isn't as much a relaxed one-way conversation. You're actually looking for interactivity in a two-way experience.
Well, you know, Visa is a sponsor on Sportsline of a lot of the streaming video, and we're really happy with what we've seen. It's kind of taken our advertising to a better place, I think. But one question I have for you is, what do you think the tolerance of a viewer is as far as how much time they're willing to sit in front of the screen and watch a streaming video? Do you guys have a policy on that or any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's funny because we look at video on the web as something that will probably go longer and shorter than TV. And by that I mean, when we do a report, a basic report where we're just giving you some news and information, we try and keep it pretty tight. On the other hand, we try and give a viewer the ability to dig deeper if they want to, because that's what the web's all about. The part of the personalization process is you're more interested in a subject than I might be. I went to school at Syracuse. If Syracuse is in a football game, I'll watch the football game or highlights. But if the coach is going to have a press conference afterwards, I might want to see it. It might be the last thing you want to see. But the ability for me to go and see that and see it in its entirety, I might sit down and watch 40 minutes of it if it's exactly what I want, and which would never be available to me on general television, which you would never want available to you. And so I think it's both because of the interactivity and because of the customization of what you're watching on the web, I think you really want both things. You want, as in a sense of just a storytelling process, you want us to be tight, because you don't want to sit there and have to get real comfortable in front of a screen just to watch something that we're trying to show you. On the other hand, the value of you getting something that is in-depth and it's about something you're interested in, I think you will put in the time because your interest in that subject is so big. And now, the next step here, though, is if you have a TV at your beck and call, your 50-inch plasma sitting right there, and you're able to take that 50-minute interview with the Syracuse coach and move it to the TV and you can sit down and watch it, I think you'd do that if you're able to. But again, we're dealing with a lot of people who are watching this stuff during the day, our prime time at work, so they don't have that luxury. You don't even have a TV nearby. Also, in a research mode or in a learning mode, the ability to go deeper and deeper and see more and more is very important. So I think it allows – there is no simple answer to this. There isn't a – we have to do things short because we're on the Internet. Short if it's an entertainment thing, because I think it's an uncomfortable entertainment environment to be watching a computer. Long in terms of in-depth and the interactive side, where you can get as much or as deep as you want to be and allow you to do that. Our reporters do interviews at CBS. They'll interview somebody for a half an hour. If 2 minutes of that much might get on the evening news. 2 minutes would be a huge amount of an interview to be, a single interview to be on the evening news. But let's say it got on. Let's say 5 minutes of it or 4 minutes of it got on the web as an interview. We still have 30 minutes of interview. And if we want that, there's no reason we can't offer that to people if they want to see it. It used to be outtakes, but there's no such thing as an outtake unless there's a legal reason for us not to show it. We should make as much footage available. It's an interactive medium. You're not subjected to it unless you want to. So I think I think the medium will allow for all lengths. But I think from the pure point of view of we're trying to entertain you or trying to give you information you don't even know you want, we have to be pretty tight and bright because the experience is a lot less comfortable than sitting in an easy chair in front of a TV.
I mean, I think that's certainly a visionary approach, and I think it's fantastic exactly what you talked about as far as like seeing the whole interview. The question is, though, how will that change news, or will it change news, or how people consume it?
Well, it changes how they – it allows them to change how they consume it. It actually doesn't change it all that much from the gathering point of view, because this stuff used to sit on a sitting room floor half the time. I mean, at CBS, we have, 1,500 people who predominantly have been working for a 22-minute broadcast every night. There's probably, 30 hours of video shot every day. And so we don't have a cable news network, and actually we believe we're very lucky for not having one right now. Our whole strategy is called cable bypass, because I believe that if the cable news stations knew 20 years ago what they knew today, they might not have invested in cable TV, because in fact everybody thought a cable news channel would be a great place for anybody who is a news junkie. But if you go to a cable news channel now, you still have to wait for whatever it is you want to see to come up. And you're going through talking heads. You're going through all these guys are trying to do whatever they can do for ratings because they're terrible ratings on news right now on cable. Because even the most successful one gets a million viewers versus, you know, 7 or 8 million for the lowest rated evening news broadcast. So our view is that's been an interesting route, and it gets bigger when big news breaks. People will go there. But from an on-demand basis, which is where the public's head is now, the public is starting to believe they can get what they want when they want it. We do much better with the web. So as contrast, the NBC correspondents who file for the nightly news file several times during the day for MSNBC. Our correspondents file for the evening news, and they file several times during the day, but for the web. Whenever they file for the web, it goes up right after they file it. It's up seconds after they're in. If you're a viewer and you come to our site, you'll see the very latest on the story you're interested in right now, right then and there. If you're watching a cable news channel, you still have to wait for that cycle to come around for whenever that report might come up. You'll see only its edited version. And it's not nearly the satisfying experience. So the news experience has morphed into this: I want it, and I want it when I want it, and when I have time to look at it. And the web allows us to provide it to them now completely, including audio, video, and text.
All right. Now, staying with video for a second, but moving a little bit off. Recently, I think it was this week, another network announced that they've got a deal with iTunes where they're going to be able to, broadcast some of their best series on a PC. Or I don't know if it's broadcast. It's basically download some of their best on a PC and also watch it on the new iPod. Is that something that you guys are looking into as well?
We're looking at where and how to distribute everything. We're looking at new ways to distribute everything we do, from news, all original content, news, entertainment, sports. There's just no question we have to adapt ourselves to how people are going to want to get this information. And it's not at all clear how that's going to be. It's an evolving world. We're podcasting audio now. We certainly intend to podcast video in multiple forms and formats. We also have to learn how video should be done differently for these formats, because a lot of traditional television video, whether it's news or entertainment, doesn't necessarily play on a small screen. Try and follow a hockey puck on a cell phone screen.
Or on a TV.
Yeah, or even on a TV. So there's a lot of experimenting going on, and we certainly are in that experimenting mode. We will be looking at all the potential ways to distribute content and to create content on these new formats. So, yes, I think that deal that they did was interesting and probably has a lot to do with the relationship between, you know, Jobs and Iger and ABC. And I think I give them a lot of credit for the announcement and for doing it. But I expect you'll see us and almost all of the major content providers playing in that space very quickly.
All right, let's now shift gears a little bit. Let's get a little more personal. I understand you were a reporter for quite a few years and working in that industry. Is there one story that you remember that you covered back then that still sticks with you today?
Wow. Yeah, there are several. I mean, I spent almost a year on the Patty Hearst kidnapping case, which was one of the more fascinating cases of that decade, which was the 70s, and probably of the century. All the issues surrounding that, the people in need program, the concept that these people would hold somebody kidnapped and request that you feed the poor, the complexities around that, the motivations, the Stockholm Syndrome issues around Patty Hearst being kidnapped for a year. And I got to do the first interview with her when she came out. And I followed her around the country for a year trying to find her with, you know, a couple other reporters. So it was it just took so much time and so much investment as a journalist. It was a fascinating story for a lot of reasons. So that was probably one of the big ones. But I've been very lucky. The first story I covered was actually as a photographer for AP in the field, as a full-time AP employee, and I worked summers there through college, was Woodstock, which wasn't supposed to be a story. It was just going to be go up and do this feature on this little rock concert in the woods. It turned out to obviously be also one of the biggest stories of the decade. And I've been very lucky, and this thing about journalists, great journalists are, or journalists who who've done, you know, who've made names for themselves is, you know, it's just as much being in the right place at the right time, which has, you know, is a lot to do with luck, but it also has a lot to do with instinct and wanting to be there. So as a kid, I always wanted, I wanted to be a journalist from as long, as far back as I can remember, since I delivered newspapers in 10 or 11 years old. But the, you know, I found, when I was 18, I got myself to the Democratic Convention in Chicago, which turned out to be a historic convention. I found myself in the middle of Woodstock. You know, there were several stories like that along my way where I just seemed to be in the right place in the right time. But journalism, it's in my blood, and it's why I love doing what I'm doing, because I think now we're reinventing journalism on the web. The storytelling process, which is, in the end, what journalists really want to do is tell stories. They want to be the first to tell you a story. So I, as excited as I was about being a newspaper reporter in the 70s and 80s and an editor, I'm that excited about what we're doing right now, or more excited, because we're able to use all these different tools of video, audio, and text, and recreate the storytelling process in a way that's probably, you know, more closer to how people will learn and educate themselves over the next, you know, century than anything we've been doing. And so knowing that mix, knowing when to use words, when to use audio, when to use video, there's no playbook. Total learning process, being, you know, and we're pioneers in it. When MarketWatch got sold and I was staring down the possibility of actually taking time off for the first time in my life, this came along and I can honestly say it's the first time in my life I took a job I didn't need to take, but I took it because it's so exciting and it's such an exciting time that the idea of taking in areas as exciting as news, sports, and entertainment, being at the cutting edge of what's going to define those for the next who knows how long, is incredibly exciting. It's a great thing. And I think, you know, I still think we can tell a story better today than we could a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And that's what's exciting about it.
Well, let's talk MarketWatch for a second then, and keep with the theme of journalism. If you were to write a headline for your, I think it was about 7 years, all right?
Yeah, MarketWatch was actually over a decade. It was a public company for almost seven years, but it was a company for about a little over 8 years, and we started it as a division of another company, a small company out here, 2 years before that. So, you know, it's one of those 10 or 12 year overnight successes.
But it's an amazing story. But what would you make the headline of your time at MarketWatch? What would that read?
Well, content mattered. I mean, we started under the philosophy that if we could do better journalism, and we could do better journalism by understanding this new medium better than anybody else, that we would be we'd create something of value. And in the end, I mean, I think the biggest testimony to it is, you know, MarketWatch, which, you know, has 100 financial journalists that was acquired by a company with 1,600 financial journalists that respected so much what we had done in this medium that they needed to spend $500 million to buy that company rather than do it themselves. And I think that's as stark and as strong a message as you can give, that content matters. I mean, it was just a matter of developing people who understood this medium and understood how to mix words and video and audio and still pictures in a way that made the storytelling better for the user and got users who had other options to come to us and see that, which takes time, but we built an audience and a loyalty that really matters. And it was, you know, most gratifying is the fact that news is not a commodity, that you can cover news better than other people can and be more important, and that has value to the reading public. So we stuck to our guns. We believed in it when the pressure was to charge and to do all those things. We believed that a free, you know, open website, ad-supported website was possible and, in fact, necessary for an area like financial journalism, where there's a whole set of people who are trying to understand financial journalism, don't know what it's worth to them, but need it. And increasingly need it because their finances are getting more complicated. So it was a great run, and it's still there. I give Wall Street Journal a lot of credit, Dow Jones a lot of credit. They're doing a great job with it.
All right, now let's say it's the year 2010. I'm going to ask you the same question. You know, what is the headline of your time at CBS Digital?
I think it'll, I hope and think it will still be the defining of a new medium, that we will, that content is king, and that the creation of content in this new medium with people who are learning how to use this new medium, whether it's news or sports or entertainment, was worthwhile and was something people would pay for and people would flock to. That we as a content company were able to quickly enough adapt to this new medium and apply the creativity, same creativity we apply to television and radio now, to interactive media, and that we did it and beat other people to it and found several ways to bring our audience with us through multiple media.
And that concludes part one. Check out part two of my interview with Larry Kramer.